Never underestimate our ability to make a bad situation worse. Do you guys remember that song that we did in Children's Message? Where's an old lady swallow the fly? When I was a kid, I always kind of liked it, kind of silly. And it starts with a problem that is not that strange, a lady swallows a fly. But her solution is a little odd. To catch the fly, she swallows a spider. And I don't know if the spider ever catches the fly, because now she has a bigger problem. She's got a spider in her stomach. So what does she do? She swallows a bird to catch the spider. And now she's got a bird in her stomach. So she swallows a cat to catch the bird. Then she swallows a dog, then a goat, then a cow, then a horse. You guys remember the last verse of that song? There wasn't a lady who swallowed a horse. She's dead, of course. And I remember as a kid, I always thought that was kind of funny. I used to like singing it. But I think it does teach us a lesson. We can be great at making a bad situation worse. And sometimes we make a situation worse just because we don't really understand the situation. And so whatever solution we come up with only exacerbates a problem. But other times, it's because we don't really understand the situation around the problem. And so we might solve that problem, but then we create a whole host of new ones. And still other times, we don't really understand our solution, and there's all kinds of unexpected results. I could go on and on. There are all kinds of reasons we make a bad situation worse. But I tell you what, you take an innocent person and you tip the scales of justice against them. They lose something because of someone else's selfish words or actions. Their pride is hurt. The people they love are hurt. Their family is hurt. And that creates a mix of factors that becomes a Molotov cocktail of things that can make a bad situation so much worse. Because if you've ever found yourself in that situation, you know how badly you want justice. And it's not bad to want justice. Justice is a good thing. But once you've gotten to a point where you can no longer do anything else to resolve the problem in legal means, that doesn't always mean the scales are even. And it's very easy for your desire for justice to turn to resentment. And resentment is an ugly sin. It consumes us, it blinds us, and it grows. It grows every time you think about all that you lost because of this person's selfish words and actions. It grows every time you think about how faithful you were to this person and they betrayed you. It grows every time you think about how they hurt your pride, hurt your family, hurt your loved ones, hurt those around you. And it can consume you. You know, there's a reason that God says in Deuteronomy 32, it's mine to avenge, I'll repay. Because God also loves justice, and he has a perfect understanding of justice. But he also has perfect love and mercy. And he never lets one defeat the other. But us? Take a heart that desires justice, let it be twisted by resentment, and it becomes a person bent on revenge. And revenge balances nothing out. It turns victims into tyrants. Some of the worst atrocities in history have been carried out by people who at one point had a good reason. They were wronged, but they went way too far the other way. And it could so easily lead us to more ridiculous lengths than the old lady who swallowed a fly. I mean, for a moment, just think about all your acts of revenge in your life. And think about what a silly song they would make. And as we find David in our lesson, in a dark cave with Saul at arm's length, make no mistake, that's a battle he's fighting on the inside. After Saul returned from pursuing the Philistines, he was told David is in the desert of En-Gedi. So Saul took 3,000 able young men from all Israel and set out to look for David and his men near the crags of the wild goats. He came to the sheep pens along the way. A cave was there, and Saul went in to relieve himself. David and his men were far back in the cave. The men said, "This is the day the Lord spoke of when he said to you, 'I will give your enemy into your hands for you to deal with as you wish.'" There Saul was, The 3,000 men he took along with him to kill David are far away. He is right there in David's grasp. And he had all the reasons you would ever need. Because David had done all he could do to be a good citizen and a good subject of his king. If you remember when this whole series started, we started looking at when David was anointed to be the next king. But he wasn't king yet. And instead of brooding over that and getting impatient with God's timing, he does his best to be a good soldier, a good citizen. And last week you saw as he went to battle against Goliath and how God won this great victory for Israel through David. David became Israel's greatest hero and Saul's best soldier. On top of that, when Saul was overcome by an evil spirit, David would come and play the harp for him, perhaps singing for him some of the psalms that became a part of our Bible. David had been good to Saul. And Saul was so consumed with jealousy over David's fame that he does not rest until he can find a way to kill David. On several occasions, when Saul calls David in to play the harp for him, while David's playing, Saul grabs a spear, throws it at David, tries to pin him to the wall. Saul gives David his daughter to be his wife. And then he uses that situation to try to get David to march off to his death. And when it doesn't work, he goes to their house in the middle of the night to kill him. And when David escapes, you know what Saul does? He gives David's wife to someone else for their wife. David loses his wife. He has to run for his life. He can't even live in the land he loves. He's got to live among the enemies of the Israelites, the Philistines. In order to be safe, he has to pretend to be insane. Think about how that would hurt your pride. He has to take his parents, and for a time they have to live with the Moabites, other enemies of Israel, because they are more safe with Israel's enemies than they are in Israel because of Saul. Saul was wasting national resources, trying to find and kill David instead of fighting their enemies. David had all the reasons he needed. And now here he was. To this day, you can go and you can visit the desert of En Gedi, and you can see all the caves that are there. There are all kinds of them. But Saul, he picks the cave that David and his men were hiding in. And there is his chance. The 3,000 men can't help him. There in the darkness, David could finally get his revenge. And as he weighs his options, on the one hand, he could see how everybody would be better off if he just ended Saul's life. Israel, him, his family, the people he cared about. But there was one thing holding him back. This was the Lord's anointed. And David would be king, but he wasn't king yet. It was not his to take revenge on Saul. How many times have we found ourselves in that cave with David? Found yourself in a situation where the scales of justice are knocked out of whack and you're on the wrong side of that equation. Found yourself in a situation where you were good to someone and they betrayed you. In a situation where someone with their selfish words or actions hurt or took from you, where they hurt your pride, hurt your family, hurt your loved ones. And you remember what God says, it's mine to avenge, I will repay, but we have this need to get our own revenge, our own justice. And if we go down that path, it is never justice. Revenge never balances the scales. It always goes too far the other direction. It turns a victim into the tyrant and leads us to more ridiculous things than the old lady who swallowed a fly. But there's something else. Something deeper that's wrong with that approach. Do you know what the rest of that passage says in Deuteronomy 32? It says, it's mine to avenge, I'll repay. In due time, their foot will slip. Their day of disaster is near, and their doom rushes upon them. Do you see what God is saying? God has perfect justice, and he sees everything. He knows everything. Nothing ever escapes his notice. He's just asking us to trust him. to believe that this God who sees all and knows all, that this God of perfect justice and perfect mercy will deal with the situation in a way that is right. And so David sits in that cave, balancing those same factors you have balanced every time you found yourself with the desire and the opportunity to get your own revenge. And here's what he does. He came to the sheep pens along the way. A cave was there, and Saul went in to relieve himself. David and his men were far back in the cave. The men said, "This is the day the Lord spoke of when he said to you, 'I will give your enemy into your hands for you to deal with as you wish.'" Then David crept up unnoticed and cut off a corner of Saul's robe. Afterward, David was conscience-stricken over having cut off a corner of his robe. He said to his men, "The Lord forbid that I should do such a thing to my master, the Lord's anointed, or lay my hand on him, for he is the anointed of the Lord." With these words, David sharply rebuked his men and did not allow them to attack Saul. And Saul left the cave and went on his way. There in the dark, David crept up, took out his knife, and he cut off just a corner of Saul's robe. And then he went back into the darkness. And he left behind his opportunity to seek revenge. He left behind his chance to try to balance the scales of justice in his favor. He left behind his anger and his resentment and his bitterness, and he left it all in God's hands. But he didn't do that because he was weak. He didn't do that because he gave up. He doesn't sit in that cave and brood over it. Instead, he follows Saul out, and in front of 3,000 men that are there to kill him, he says this. Then David went out of the cave and called out to Saul, "My lord the king." When Saul looked behind him, David bowed down and prostrated himself with his face to the ground. He said to Saul, "Why do you listen when men say David is bent on harming you? This day you've seen with your own eyes how the Lord delivered you into my hands in the cave. Some urged me to kill you, but I spared you. I said, 'I will not lay my hand on my lord because he is the Lord's anointed.' See, my father, look at this piece of your robe in my hand. I cut off the corner of your robe, but did not kill you. See that there is nothing in my hand to indicate that I am guilty of wrongdoing or rebellion. I have not wronged you, but you are hunting me down to take my life. May the Lord judge between me and you, and may the Lord avenge the wrongs you have done to me, but my hand will not touch you. As the old saying goes, from evildoers come evil deeds, so my hand will not touch you. Against whom is the king of Israel come out? Who are you pursuing? A dead dog, a flea? May the Lord be our judge and decide between us. May he consider my cause and uphold it. May he vindicate me by delivering me from your hand." David simply leaves it in God's hands. And when Jesus talks about turning the other cheek, he is not talking about Christians being cowards. He is just urging us to understand that we have God by our side, a God of perfect justice and perfect mercy, that revenge is not ours to take, that instead that lays in God's hands, and that is far better. You know, not long after this, there were some warriors who came to join David. They were called the Sons of Korah. Later, there were sons of Korah who became the musicians at the temple, and they wrote Psalm 46. And you can almost imagine if these are descendants of the sons of Korah, the sons of Korah themselves who are with David, them hearing stories about David and what happens in the cave that day, and understanding why David was content to leave it in God's hands, because God is our refuge and strength and ever-present help in trouble. And if you keep reading Psalm 46, you get this interesting picture, these contrasting views of a world where everything is turned upside down. It says, "The earth gives way, the mountains fall into the heart of the sea, waters roar and foam, mountains quake with their surging." It paints a picture of a life that has been turned upside down, just like the lives of David and his companions. But at the very same time, in the midst of that chaos, it says, "There is a river whose streams make glad the city of God." That with God there is peace in the midst of chaos. that he will not let us fall, that he will come to our aid. You see, David didn't leave these matters in God's hands because he gave up. He left these matters in God's hands because he understood that nations are in uproar, kingdoms fall. It always seems like the world is falling apart, but the Lord has just to lift his voice and the earth melts. Revenge was not his to seek any more than it's ours, but it lay in the hands of a God of perfect love and perfect mercy. And so what do? There comes a point where we just be still and know that I am God. Not because we quit, not because we're cowards, but because we know who's on our side. A God of perfect justice, who understands when the scales of justice are out of whack better than we do, who sees when we're wronged and feels it more acutely than we do, and yet who balanced the scales of justice in our favor by sending his son Jesus because of his grace and his mercy, and who always makes sure that the one does not defeat the other, that all things are done well. And so that day, David leaves with nothing more than a corner of Saul's robe. And if you keep reading in our section, it sounds like Saul is sorry, but it doesn't take long before Saul is trying to kill David again, and David will live on the run for a while. And I would imagine there are some times where that little corner of Saul's robe seems like a pretty pathetic trophy. But aren't all our acts of revenge the same way? Pathetic attempts to control things that are not ours to control. No, the matter is solved because it's left in God's hands. And when the time was right, God made David king just like he promised, according to his plan and his timing. And that was what is best. You see, there are going to be times in life where we find ourselves on the wrong side of that equation, where the scales of justice have been upturned and we are the ones who suffer. But in those moments, remember, the God of Jacob is your fortress, your safe place. You can leave those matters in his hands, and you can know that is the best place to leave them. Amen.
Thanks for listening to Emmanuel's Sermon Podcast. If you'd like to learn more about Emmanuel, you can follow us on Facebook or visit us at imluth.org. That's immluth.org. Have a great day.